There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Oh, it's not shelter in place, but it at least lives in the same neighborhood as shelter in place, as the state of Alabama has now had a massive reduction in what can be open. And that's how we start this Friday edition of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Governor Kay Ivey on Twitter saying, rather than shutting down the entire state, I propose a different solution. Today, I joined Dr. Harris in announcing specific lists of businesses that will close until April 17th. Let's go straight to the audio from a press conference from just about a half hour ago with Governor Kay Ivey. We'll get through that portion. And then also Dr. Scott Harris from ADPH talking more specifics about what's closed and what's open. This is a lot to digest here, and we're going to dive into it. Also later this hour, Congressman Bradley Byrne, who headed to Washington because they called for the vote in person in Washington in the House to vote for the coronavirus stimulus relief bill. We'll talk to him as well. Start off now with Governor Ivey. This is about 35 minutes old.
I cannot stress to you enough the fact that we must be serious about eliminating the spread of this deadly virus. Folks, this is real. It is very real. And I want to assure you that I'm doing everything in my power and using every available resource. We must protect the people of Alabama. On March 6th, I set up a coronavirus task force of state leaders and health experts. I asked Dr. Scott Harris to chair that task force and be the spokesman for the information for the public on this issue. He's done an outstanding job, and he's done it in a difficult and unprecedented time. On March the 13th, before we even had a case in Alabama, I issued a state of emergency because we knew Alabama would not be shielded from the COVID-19 virus. We enacted social distancing guidelines to limit 25 people or less from congregating and took the added step for restaurants to be limited to takeout or delivery only. This was done first in Jefferson County, but shortly thereafter, we applied it statewide. Under the authority granted me during the state of the emergency, I moved the primary runoff election to July 14th in order to protect our poll workers and to guarantee our students that they, our citizens, that they can feel free and safe when they cast their vote. Working in concert with Dr. Eric Mackey, Superintendent of Schools, I issued an order that would close our schools until April 6th to protect our students and teachers. I also closed Alabama's beaches, prohibited visitation to assisted living centers and nursing homes, and provided special guidelines for child care centers. Last week, I authorized Adjutant General Cheryl Gordon with the Alabama National Guard to activate up to 100 guardsmen, and I will soon be putting their first unit to work. My team has moved the tax filing date to the new federal filing date of July 15. We've also announced that anyone who loses a job because of coronavirus will have the potential to receive unemployment compensation. And just yesterday, I announced with Dr. Mackey that when school resumes on April 6th, instead of returning to a traditional classroom, students will be allowed to work from home while maintaining their academic instruction. Folks, this is a quick snapshot of how my administration is responding to this deadly virus. As I've said before, we're going to make our share of mistakes along the way. But you can count on this. We are not going to be accused of not making difficult decisions, nor are we going to be accused from offering criticism with no solutions. As you know, this pandemic is a global crisis, but it's not something that cannot be managed. We will use a measured and balanced approach to address this crisis. Unfortunately, there is no instruction manual on how to do this. Yes, it will be hard, but I am more confident than ever that we will get through this together. That's why, from this point forward, I want all of us to think of this as Together Alabama. And as we do everything humanly possible to ensure that we have adequate equipment to fight this virus, and to communicate the urgency to stay at home as much as possible, I also have to keep my eye on the economy. A lot of people out there probably know I was a former teacher, but you may not know that I was also an economics teacher. So as governor, I have made our economy and workforce development a real priority. Like you, I know we will certainly be dealing with the fallout of COVID-19 in the areas of health and our economy, and both of these weigh heavily on my mind. Each day, we watch the coronavirus spread throughout our state with one new report after another. You've heard me say we aren't California, we are not New York, but Grove Hill is not Gadsden, and Decatur is not Dothan. That's why I support our mayors throughout the state that feel they need to take additional steps if their situation on the ground warrants it. But I have a responsibility to look statewide, and in this case, one size does not fit all. My word of caution to those who want to take a more direct action is this: government can choke businesses. We do it every day with regulation and bureaucracy. But folks, if we kill businesses, we can't print enough money in Washington, D.C. to bring a dead business back to life. Clearly, we have our own unique set of circumstances in our state that we must rise to the task to meet. So rather than shutting the entire state down, I propose a different solution. Today, I joined Dr. Harris in announcing a specific list of businesses that will be closed until April 17. I do not believe our economy needs a full shelter-in-place order, as some other states have done, not at this time, and hopefully not ever. However, I do believe limiting social gatherings as much as possible will be the best way we can combat this virus. And if people want to do more individually by imposing your own shelter in place, you don't need my permission to do so. This decision has not been made lightly, but it has been made with a tremendous amount of concern and discussion. Places where people closely interact with each other and often touch one another will need to temporarily shut their doors. Places like nail salons, day spas, barbershops, gyms, fitness centers, bowling alleys, and concert venues. Folks, this is incredibly disappointing news to deliver, but this is a matter of life and death. So if you can stay at home, you are safer at home. And if you choose to stay at home, this doesn't mean inviting your friends over. This means be isolated. Stay at home. I want the people of Alabama to know that the struggles of losing a job and trying to find a way to pay a mortgage on a home is not lost on me or my administration. Yesterday, Julie from Mobile called my office. She explained that she'd worked every day of her life since she was 15 years old. Julie currently works in a family restaurant, which has been closed. Her husband worked in a hospital, and since we are currently asking medical providers to not perform elective surgeries and procedures, he has been sent home. She explained the burden she faced in her finances the next few months. She said, I don't want a handout, but I do need some help. Her story is just one of many that I know of, and I know a lot of people in our state are facing this same kind of burden. So to Julie and all the others in our state, I'm going to do everything in my power to help you and all of the people of our state get through this difficult time. You have my word. Now I'd like to ask Dr. Harris to come and speak to us for a few minutes.
We'll run to the break here and come back and pick up with Dr. Harris, who comes in and does the dirty work and talk about everything shut down in our state. It's not shelter in place, but wow. It's at least a cousin to it, isn't it? Coming right back. 1217, this is FM Talk 1065.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile. Am I shocked this came to Alabama? No. But being instituted today, I think that timeline seems to caught a lot of people by surprise, and we'll go to it. So we heard Governor Ivey speak. Now she hands the mic over to Alabama Department of Public Health Director Dr. Scott Harris, and he takes it from here.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us today. I want to go over the items that we are going to include in a new statewide health order that's being issued today. The terms of this will become effective at 5 p.m. tomorrow, March 28th, and will extend through April 17th, which is a Friday at 5 p.m. We have several of the orders that are similar to those that were in our initial order last week, but I'll go through these and take a few minutes and try to cover these items with you. And I know we're going to have some questions to answer on these a little bit later. Effective March 28th at 5 p.m., all non-work-related gatherings of 10 persons or more, or non-work-related gatherings of any size that cannot maintain a consistent 6-foot distance between persons are prohibited. Employers shall take all reasonable steps to meet these standards for employees and customers. We had a health order related to gatherings of 25 or more, consistent with what the president has said and with what we have gotten from CDC. We have changed that to 10 persons or more. Effective March 28th at 5 p.m., the following non-essential businesses, venues, and activities shall be closed to non-employees or shall not take place. We have four categories, including entertainment, athletic facilities, close contact services, and retail. And I'm going to list those for you now. Entertainment venues, including nightclubs, bowling alleys, arcades, concert venues, theaters, auditoriums, and performing arts centers, tourist attractions, including museums and planetariums, racetracks, indoor children's play areas, adult entertainment venues, casinos, bingo halls, venues operated by social clubs, athletic facilities and activities, including fitness centers and commercial gyms, spas and public or commercial swimming pools, yoga, bar or spin facilities, spectator sports, sports that involve interaction with another person of closer than 6 feet, activities that require use of shared sporting apparatus and equipment, activities on commercial or public playground equipment, close contact service providers, including barbershops, hair salons, waxing salons, threading salons, nail salons and spas, body art facilities and tattoo services, tanning salons, massage therapy establishments and massage services. Retail stores, including furniture and home furnishing stores, clothing, shoe and clothing accessory stores, jewelry, luggage and leather goods stores, department stores, books, craft and music stores, and sporting goods stores. We've been asked specifically about gun stores. Gun stores are not included under retail. Individual gun stores are not included under retail for the purposes of this section. There are a number of businesses that are not on the list. Those that are not on the list are not required to be closed to non-employees, but employers should take all reasonable steps to meet those standards of social distancing and hygiene that we have mentioned before. Much of the rest of the order is similar to what has been previously announced. The beaches shall remain closed through the end of this health order, April 17th. The same status applies to senior citizen centers, to all schools, public and private, including elementary, secondary, post-secondary, technical, and specialty schools, and colleges and universities. Facilities providing daycare have health orders that are unchanged from our previous order last week. I certainly understand that this order temporarily affects the changes that have been made in Jefferson County. They had somewhat more stringent daycare orders, and they are certainly free to reinstate those at their discretion after we have conferred on this. Hospitals, nursing homes, and long-term care facilities will continue to prohibit visitation, except in certain situations. All dental, medical, and surgical procedures shall be postponed until further notice. We have a section in here on clarification of that. We've had a number of questions on what exactly is elective and not. We do not have an established list of what is elective and what is not elective, and we don't have blanket authorization given to any kind of facility. But we have added detail here so that that will be able to be determined in the clinical judgment of a provider who's performing these services. We continue to have the same health orders as they apply to restaurants, bars, breweries, and similar establishments, which will continue through April 17th. There are some possibilities of receiving exemptions from those that are similar to our previous health order. And for now, this order supersedes and preempts all the other orders through Mobile County and Jefferson County, although those counties are certainly free to add their own more stringent measures if deemed necessary with their health officers and their own local boards of health. These are the main issues or the main items contained in the health order today, and I'll turn it back over to Governor Ivey.
All right, so we're going to take a few questions that reporters have sent over, and the first one is for the governor, and it is from Lydia Nussbaum with WSFA. She asks, how are you going to determine non-essential versus essential? What is the criteria to determine this?
That's a good question, and I'm sure it's one that a lot of people have. We're designating four categories of non-essential businesses, and each category further specifies subcategories of businesses that will be closed. So unlike other states, we have not tried to say what is essential. We're simply designating what is non-essential. If it's not on the list, it's not closed.
And Governor, also for you, as a follow-up to that, this is from Kim Chandler with the Associated Press. How did you decide which businesses to include in the order?
If the business involves the operators or customers being closely with each other and touching one another, they're highly likely to transmit the virus because they just have to touch in some of these businesses. However, we've been working closely with Dr. Harris and his team and other medical experts, so let me invite Dr. Harris back up for any comments he'd like to make.
Thank you, Governor. It is in a way somewhat of a decision that creates, you know, winners and losers in a sense. We do have to make some difficult decisions about what we would consider to be essential and non-essential. honestly, I'm not entirely comfortable with that term, because all these businesses are things that are part of our everyday lives and part of the things we all need and participate in. And certainly the people who do those jobs every day are not people who are not essential. So that's a legal term that I wish we had a better phrase for. But we looked very carefully at what other states had done. We've looked closely and tried to decide in what type of environments a transmission of disease would be more likely to occur. And so, as I mentioned, in some point, it's always going to be seen a little bit as arbitrary, but based on the best information we have, we felt like this was the most comprehensive list that we could get to balance between keeping people working, but also making sure we protected everyone and kept them safe.
Governor, we've got another question for you. This is from Karen Goldsmith with Alabama Public Television. And she asks, how many unemployment claims do you anticipate?
Well, first and foremost, these are certainly unprecedented times, and there's just no way that we can forecast at this time how many that will be. I know that the Department of Labor is working overtime and around the clock to process the many, many claims that are coming in. And the federal dollars that we anticipate, however, will alleviate the state's burden. But simply put, it's just too early to tell.
Governor, this is from Alan Collins with WBRC.
I'll tell you what we're going to do here. We're going to go ahead and pause so we can get that question when we come back to the press conference. Dalton in studio with me as well, as we're getting audio from Governor Ivey and Alabama Department of Public Health Director Scott Harris, which I know they're saying it's not shelter in place, but a whole bunch of the state is shut down.
A whole bunch.
I know, see some specific questions on things. We'll get the rest of the presser there and then try to work our way through what's closed, what can be open. We'll talk about that when we return. All right, Ted. Also, Congressman Byrne, I think they're getting ready to vote in Washington. He'll either join us at 12:45 or 1 o'clock. So stay close. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35, FM Talk 106.5, online at fmtalk1065.com, where we have our COVID-19 local news tab, interviews that we do with people from the health field, the economics world, regular business owners.
Schools.
Oh, man, the school interviews as well, all in one place. As we, like you, we're a local company. We're not based anywhere else. We're based right here. We're just like you, a local small business trying to navigate this thing, and we're going to do our best every day to be here for you. Of course, the numbers go up. We're talking about this morning, and we now have the first fatality for Mobile County from COVID-19. Mobile County Health Department confirmed the first death in current death toll in the state of Alabama is 4, now one of them here in Mobile County. There are currently 21 cases of coronavirus in Mobile County and 538 in the state. It keeps going up. Mm-hmm. I think it may have gone up since then as well, because I thought I heard Dr. Scott Harris say a number higher than that.
And they're investigating deaths also to see whether those can be attributed to COVID-19. So we'll see that number rise. I believe the latest number for Baldwin County is 5 as well.
Okay. So the numbers continue to grow. And obviously that is part of the decision made by the governor for, it's not shelter in place. And I don't know if it's fair to say that's just a semantics, because it's not everybody, but they're saying non-essential businesses in the state of Alabama are shut down. Mm-hmm. And anywhere, you hear the beginning of that, anywhere that there's a gathering of non-work-related of 10 or more people. So 9 or under, but if it's 10 or more people, so that, I mean, that could be, I mean, there's, I don't know how that works even inside a store that was deemed essential, mm-hmm. Okay? So I don't, these are, I have questions just like y'all do, but if you're saying that essential stores like a grocery store is open, okay, grocery store is open, are they limiting the people in the grocery store to 9 or less at any time? And do the employees, I imagine the employees in their count as people, so are they already over the limit when they open the door?
Right.
Or is there an exemption for that?
So, just think of the big box stores, Walmarts, Targets. What does that mean for them?
And I don't know this, too. This is just something that caught my ear in hearing the discussion. Sporting goods stores are closed, deemed non-essential. Gun stores, they said, are open. Well, I tell you, it's not many. I mean, there are a few right here at home. Jeff's, everybody, Jeff out at Stone Arms and all that. They're just gun stores. But most places, our friends at McCoy's, I don't know. Our friends at McCoy's have a huge gun rack. Mm-hmm. And they have, but they have some other stuff in the store. I'm thinking if it is for the positive, maybe a store, one of the big box stores here, stays open because they have a gun counter, even though we would argue the bulk of the store is everything other than firearms and ammunition. Firearms right. and ammunition, maybe 10 or 15%. Then there's all this other stuff going on. Do they get to stay open? Do you have to be 100? Is it like that question about a bar and grill? How much bar and how much grill? Is it? These are questions that are coming up, and I think people are going to be trying to get answers to. All right, so we return to the press conference from earlier here, listening to questions from the media for the governor here, and we'll go right back to it.
Are the penalties for violation of these closures?
The penalties are punishable by a fine of up to $500 per violation, and we'll also rely on the guidance of Attorney General Steve Marshall. I just urge all Alabamians to heed the warnings. Every Alabamian can social distance. Every Alabamian can wash your hands for 20 seconds thoroughly. Every Alabamian can take responsibility for yourself and for members of a family.
And Governor, another question. This is from Caroline Beck with Alabama Daily News. What left is there to shut down after this? It seems that most retail stores and services will be shut down after this, except for grocery stores, pharmacies, and hospitals. So why not put a shelter-in-place order for the state?
Well, this is not a decision I came to lightly, but y'all, you have to consider other factors, such as the importance of keeping businesses and companies open and the economy going as much as possible. When a business closed down, it's very, very almost impossible to bring it back to life. So, Alabamians, we can do our part, and I think if we all do our part through April 17th, we'll see a situation much improved.
Governor Tim Lockett with the Anniston Star, he asked, any estimate of how many workers will be affected?
That's hard to tell, but we're going to do our best to protect everyone, but the intention is keeping the economy going and protect the well-being of all Alabamians, and we'll continue to do that.
Governor Ivey, this is from Brian Lyman with the Montgomery Advertiser. House Speaker Mac McCutcheon said yesterday he believed the legislature would consider an extension of unemployment benefits from the current 14 to 20 weeks to 26 weeks. Given the rise in unemployment claims that we are seeing, would you be in favor of this approach?
Well, certainly I'll be open to all options and look forward to those discussions, but at the same time, what's the law now is the law, but I do appreciate the legislature being aware of this possibility, and I look forward to working with them.
And Governor Ivey, a question from Rashad Hudson with CBS 42 and Nexstar Media. Do you have a response to the lieutenant governor's recently issued memo?
As a public official, our greatest responsibility is to be honest with one another and to the people of Alabama. I invited Lieutenant Governor Amesworth to be on my task force because he said he was willing to help and wanted to help. What is not helpful is raising challenges and criticisms and issues that we're already aware of but offering no solution. And showing no willingness to work with the task force, the team that's trying to fix it.
Dr. Harris, a question for you. This is from Kip Rayleigh with Fox 10. Are open air places like golf courses, state parks, etc., included in the closures?
The only ones included in the closures are the ones that we specifically listed. Open-air activities certainly are open as long as they can adhere to the other parts of the health order, including limits on the number of people gathering. So, for example, I certainly would expect a golf course would be open. There may be situations where 10 or more people would be gathered at a golf course in an environment, and that would be covered by the order. But as long as people can maintain appropriate social distancing and be aware of those numbers that are included, then those open-air venues would certainly be open.
Dr. Harris, this is from Andrew James with Alabama News Center. Have any of the confirmed cases put large groups of people at risk of exposure? Example, retail workers, food workers, first responders, grocery store employees, factory employees. If so, will the public be notified of those cases? What is the state's protocol for notifying people who may have been exposed?
Sure. So this is part of the normal epidemiology that public health does all the time. We have a number of diseases that in our state are reported to public health and that we investigate and that we will contact a person who has a certain type of infection and find out what their daily activities are and who is in their household and who's in their workplace and try to make sure that we reach contacts. And we continue to do this with COVID-19. There have been cases that have existed in workplaces. I know the media has reported a few of them already, and that's certainly not surprising given the number of cases that we're beginning to see now. And so in each one of those cases, our epidemiology staff is aware of that case and has spoken with that person and has reached out to contact to get in touch with those people who may have been considered contacts or may be at risk.
All right, and Dr. Harris, this is from Henry Thornton with Yellowhammer News. How, in effect, are the measures introduced today different from a shelter-in-place order?
I would say the intent of this is similar to maybe what a shelter-in-place is in that it's not coercive, it's not literally a shelter-in-place, but we're trying to emphasize the importance of people to stay home and stay away from crowds. We want people to take this seriously. We want people to stay home whenever possible. As Governor Ivey said, this is not a time to stay home with a big crowd of other people. This is a time to stay home and isolate yourself to every extent possible.
All right, so we are going to break from the presser, but you get the general sense of what's happening on Twitter. I've put up the text there for what Governor Ivey laid out today. And we also mentioned we were waiting on the vote to take place in Washington in the House. You heard a few minutes ago that did happen. And we're joined by our Congressman, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, just off the... Did you go to the floor? What was vote like? So you went into the House, you did the vote as normal, or how did it work?
It was totally not normal, if you could see that way. No, there were, the word got out last night that Thomas Massie from Kentucky was going to object to voice voting the bill. I literally got a text message from Mike Rogers from Anniston saying, we've got to get a quorum here. And the quorum's necessary because that's the last thing that he could call upon. He could say, there's not a quorum here. Well, a quorum of the House did show up, and I can tell you I was in there and you could count them. But because of social distancing, we had to be, like, in the galleries and all over the floor. It's like members sprinkled out everywhere. So we went in there. We had speeches. I don't know if you saw. We had 3 hours or more of debate, and I was a participant in the debate. And then when we got finished, Thomas Massie stood up and said, let's see how exactly how he put it. He said, I want to ask for a roll call vote, and you have to have 20 people, I think is the number, to agree with him to do it. And he didn't have that. And so he said, I suggest that there's not the presence of quorum. And the chair looked around the room and said, I disagree. The motion carries. So after 3 or 4 hours of debate, it took us about 5 or 10 minutes to actually vote it and get it done. But it's done. So on its way to the president.
So, and President Trump has talked about, I mean, no question here, he'll sign this. But so you had to go to Washington for just that, for that yes. vote. I mean, just and I, then it's over.
I got up at 4 o'clock this morning, drove to the airport, flew to Washington, and sat there to make sure we had a quorum so that this bill could get to the president. He could sign it. We get the relief to the people of America. But under our rules, one member has the power to do that. Now, I flew. I was talking to a lot of people that drove for like 9 hours. Long, long, long drives to get here. But we got the quorum here to make sure that we got this bill to the president. This can't wait another day. We need to get this done. And we did.
I can't imagine that the invitation list for parties going forward will include Massie, because people understand Massie out of Kentucky, a Republican here, and the president has been really upset with him today, saying he should be kicked out of the Republican Party. What's your feeling?
Well, I'm always loath to kick people out of the party because I like being a big tent party. But Thomas has pulled stuff like this before. He doesn't have good common sense about this stuff. There's stuff in this bill, Sean, that I don't like. I don't like at all.
Right.
I've sort of, you know, said my piece, and everybody's had to hear me out about some of the things I really don't like in it. And probably everybody in that room had some things in that bill that they didn't like, Democrat and Republican. But, you know, we had 3 million people in America last week file unemployment insurance claims. I've talked to dozens and dozens and dozens of businesses in our district that are in distress, and this is absolutely extraordinary times, and we have to come forward with some extraordinary relief. And sometimes to get that relief, you have to put, you know, it's like sausage making. You got to put a bill together that's got stuff in it that I don't like and others don't like. But the essential stuff that we needed in it is in it, and it will give relief to people.
Now, I mean, in the future, I'd love to see, you know, those things get left on the floor from both sides and have agreement, you know, the things that you could agree, and I don't know if you can, but some basic tenets agreed to by Democrats and Republicans, pass that out and then go back to work on the stuff you disagree. But I know that's not the way it works. But
they had to throw some pork in there, which made me pretty mad because it was totally unnecessary pork. And there's some things they threw in there to try to help unions that had nothing to do with coronavirus. Made me pretty angry that that had to be thrown in there. But the worst stuff that Pelosi had in that 1,400 monster of a bill that she had, they were able to keep out, the worst stuff. But the fact that they gave in on these other things is truly maddening. And I just, you know, I've heard from a lot of people who are concerned that the unemployment insurance provisions are too generous. Not that we shouldn't have had some in there, but they were too generous, and there's some good arguments to be made about that. I certainly understand that. But at the end of the day, you get a piece of legislation like this in an extraordinary circumstance, and you got to go with it. This is not 2008 and 2009. The companies that are being affected here have not brought this on themselves. This is something that was caused, you know, something was brought on them by outside circumstances. And we just can't crater the economy and crater the quality of life for everybody in America when we have an opportunity to try to cushion this very substantial blow that we've got here. So there are plenty of things I can tell you I don't like about the bill, but the central thrust of it, the things we really needed, we got in.
If you're just joining us, talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne, just off the vote here for this, do you call it a relief bill, a stimulus bill? What's the proper nomenclature on this?
No, I wouldn't call it a stimulus bill at all. It's like a cushion bill. All this can do is cushion the blow that we know has already been felt out there to try to get more money to individuals, the actual tax rebate checks, but also enhanced money for people that are that have lost their jobs so that they make them as whole as we possibly can. And to get money out there to small businesses in a way where they won't have to pay it back if they keep people employed, to keep people from getting on unemployment insurance, to make sure that we've got some help out there to the bigger employers, the 500-plus employers that are in affected industries. But it's not a bailout. It's their loans. They have to pay them back. And then to make sure we get the money out there to the health care system in many different areas so that we're responding to this in a very robust way. And I think this bill does that. So, like I say, there's some things in here I don't like. I don't know why we had to throw a bunch of money at the Kennedy Center.
But
that's the sort of price you pay when you have 435 people in the House, 100 people in the Senate. And some of them are crazy liberal and some of them aren't. And you have to catch all these people together to get a piece of legislation through on an expedited basis. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, I wonder, is there ever a time that, you know, when we get on the backside of this, that whoever put that provision in there or whichever members of the House did, that they could be named and we could have their names?
We know about the Kennedy Center and Senator Leahy.
Leahy put that in. Okay. All right, so that was specific.
If you want my support, you got to put, I think it's $25 million in for the Kennedy Center.
So Leahy, I like to know these things. That's good. I'm writing that down so we know who, in a time of crisis, is doing that. Because I think you make a fair argument. And this is one, you know, you could come at this, Democrat or Republican, and argue about how much money and what percentage it is in unemployment insurance. I think that is a fair battleground of discussion. But the Kennedy Center, that's beyond the pale. That's beyond the pale. This is, I mean, we're trying to save people's jobs, keep their lives solvent. And he's getting $25 million. I'm writing that down. All right.
And you know, they threw in a bunch of money in there to buck up the post office department. The post office department's not being dramatically affected by this disease. I mean, there are billions of dollars in here for the post office that are totally unnecessary in response to coronavirus. So we've got stuff like that that's in the bill, and it's infuriating to people like me that just want to put the stuff in there that we have to have in there. But the way people have been playing this game up here for years, you know, they just expect they get their stuff. I mean, I didn't sit down for one single second and say, I want you to get something from my district. I want you to put in an extra $5 million for something from my district. But other people have done that, particularly senators have done that, and we're all having to live with it in order to get this relief to the American people, which is so very important at this point in time.
All right, Congressman, I'm getting a lot of questions here on the text line, so let me run through a couple of these, because I would point out, too, that a week ago today, when you were on and you talked about what this could look like for small businesses, you started a bunch of discussion. It's continued through the week. When you joined me this week, we talked about it more, and it continues now to get this week. You're ahead of it. This week has gotten a lot of attention. All right, this texter says, question for the congressman, what is the rate, and I guess he means on the loan, is it a blanket payout? Why would the minimum wage to $17 an hour employee want to seek out work if they're paid over their current rate?
Oh, they're talking about unemployment insurance.
Yeah.
So the idea is that we want to make people who've lost their jobs, and we have, obviously, we had 3 million new people look for work, say they needed work last week. We're trying to get them as close to being whole as we can. Now, in some states, there are much more generous unemployment insurance benefits than they are in a state like Alabama. So the idea was to try to get people as close to where they should be as they can. Now, my argument was all along, we'll figure out what they were making and get them up to, you know, higher than they are now, but maybe not 100% of what they're making now. But in order to get this money out there quick, they said, no, if we do that, it'll take forever to figure out how to implement it, and then it'll be too late to help people. So we're just going to send out $600 extra per week to everybody on top of what their state benefits are. I don't particularly like that approach. I understand the need to get the money out there. I think they could have done that in a little different way. But I guess in the sausage making over in the Senate, that's how they decided to do it.
Well, I mean, if we look at things like this, either the one-time payment or the unemployment hike in wage, states like ours, I mean, we win on that. You know, I've said $1,200 carries a lot more buying power in Mobile County than it does, you know, in San Fernando. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we win on that one, but it's still not make it, it doesn't make it right.
No, and I'm not arguing that. And what we want more than anything else is for businesses to stop laying people off, because
right.
That's why we put this small business provision in there. So small businesses will quit laying people off and actually bring people back on, because if they bring them back on by April, first, they'll qualify for these loans that will be forgiven if you've got it for payroll. So we're trying to stop the layoffs, because we want these firms to be intact when we get over the hump here, so they go right back to business. If they lay all their people off and just, you know, start winding down, then that means they're not there to pick up the slack when we're ready for them to pick up the slack. You know, a restaurant that closes down, lays all its people off, how long will it take for them to reopen again when we're ready for them to reopen?
Well said. Yeah. So explain, and I know you've done it a couple times, but there are always new people hearing it. Explain, like, in regular folks' language here, which you're good at, what this means for small business. How does it work? You go to the banker, get a loan, kind of walk us through that process.
Yeah. Every bank in America is going to have the authority from the SBA to make these loans to businesses with less than 500 employees. And the loans will be there for the firms to use for payroll expenses, for like group health insurance, for salaries, for mortgage interest, for rent, and for interest on debt that was incurred before February the 15th. So the idea is that you get the loan from your bank, and if you use it for those purposes and don't lay people off, or if you've laid them off, you bring them back on, then that loan will be forgiven. It'll be like a grant. And that's the incentive for people not to lay people off. That's what we want them to do. We want them not to lay people off. Now, I've been on the phone on some conference calls with various business groups around the district trying to make sure we get this information out there. And I've encouraged people to go see their bank. And unfortunately, people want to see their banks. The bank's called the SBA office in Birmingham. The SBA office in Birmingham said, well, that bill hasn't passed yet, so you can't do that. So that's just part of the frustration of what we're dealing with here. And I was on the phone with the man that runs SBA in Alabama yesterday to make it very clear to him what this legislation says. And I told him it is going to pass. So now he can't argue with me because it is for sure passed. And we'll get signed by the president. So what we want people to do is these small business people go see your bank and start working on these SBA loans now. I know the banks don't have all the information they need, but start the process now, because the quicker you get that process started, the quicker you're going to get your money.
Okay, and they're going to know, I mean, you said they don't know everything now, but they're going to know a lot more than I do, right? When I go in there, I can say, hey, I'm here for the small business loan, and then they'll tell me, I'm sure, what papers I need to bring with me. And
well, they're going to say, all right, we're waiting for guidance from SBA. They're going to say that first. But you already have a banking relationship with them. They need to know, this is where I am in my business. I would think that would help the banks to know where their customers are. And that initial meeting will help kickstart the process. Now, the law requires SBA to have that guidance out there in 15 days. We know they're trying to expedite that. And so the quicker we get all this out there, the quicker all these businesses will get the loans and keep people going. That's what we need.
Okay, because there's so many questions here. I can't, but have to have them directed maybe to your office.
If you're a small business, go see your bank.
Okay.
That's what I'm telling people.
And we have just about 30 seconds left here. The turnaround for the one-time payments, we heard Mnuchin say maybe 3 weeks. You believe that?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, I think they're going to push as hard as they can to get it done in 3 weeks. He's told us that, and I believe him. I think he's going to do everything he can to make that happen. Now, he's pushing on a bureaucracy that can be hard to push on, and so let's see if he can do it. But he's wed to it. The president's wed to it. And my experience up here, if the president and the secretary of the treasury say, by God, we're going to do it, it gets done.
There you go. Congressman, thank you for your time. Thanks for the update. And we'll talk to you again really soon.
Yes, sir. Talk to you later.
All right. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us from Washington, and we continue hour number two of Midday Mobile. News is next.